Well, I hope you've seen our autumn programme card, and I'd like you just to look at the front of it because you'll see an important sentence there at the top under the autumn 2022, a strapline, to know Christ better and to make him better known. To know Christ better and to make him better known. I first heard this as a strapline during my curacy on the lips of one of our lay readers. He was a head teacher in a comprehensive school, very used to writing purpose statements for educational institutions, and yet he concluded that this was the best ever purpose statement for a local church. It always struck me ever since. What is the purpose for a local church? What is its raison d'etre? What is it all about? Our purpose, he suggested, is twofold. If Jesus Christ is a wonderful person, true and beautiful, the embodiment of truth and love, and he is, then our primary purpose must be for us as individuals in the church, each to come to know Christ better. As the old prayer says, to see him more clearly, to follow him more nearly, to love him more dearly, day by day. And then secondly, as we grow in our knowledge of him, and if we are continuing to taste that the Lord is good, surely we want to share this knowledge of Christ with others, to make him better known. Not keeping this knowledge to ourselves as a secret, but sharing what we have received, as one beggar tells another beggar where to find bread. I don't know how you found yourself reacting to this purpose statement for a church. Many people in the UK today might find it strange. I thought the church was just about do-gooders who want to do good. I thought the church was just about religious people getting together. If planet Earth were ever visited by extraterrestrial visitors, they might be particularly perplexed by such people gathering in old buildings every seventh day. Why are they meeting every seventh day? Why are they singing together? Why are they using some very odd prayers, some very old prayers written several hundred years ago? And why do they keep referring to an even older book, 2,000 years to 3,000 years ago, that it was written? What is this strange cult? Is it a merely social society? Is it a musical society? Is it a society for ancient history? When looked at from outside, the Christian church is a rather baffling thing, and it will always remain baffling so long as we leave Jesus Christ out of the picture. Without Christ at the centre, as a central hub, the wheels of the church simply fall off. Jesus himself said, "Without me, you can do nothing." And without the person of Christ at the centre, the Christian church can do nothing. It should do nothing. It doesn't exist. It doesn't have any purpose to exist. The church without Christ at the centre is not a Christian church. So Jesus wants us to have the rightful place at the very centre of our life. If he stands there, if he stands here, he does so as a person that we can come to know, a person we can come to know personally. And the Christian faith is therefore not about believing ideas or behaving morally. It's about a relationship with a knowable person. It's, in other words, a matter of the heart. And it's all about love. Christ's love for us and our love for him. So please join me as we learn today from the example of two people in the New Testament who found their lives were being transformed by knowing Christ personally. St. Peter and St. Paul. John 21, our gospel reading, was the story of Christ's encounter with Peter. Philippians 3, our epistle reading, the testimony given by Paul about what it meant for him to know Christ. Peter and Paul lived in a different age and a different world to us. But the glory of the Christian gospel is that the risen Christ transcends time and space. And we, in our own day, can come to meet with him just as they did. Let's pray that the risen Lord reveals himself to each one of us as we look briefly at these passages together. John 21. Oh, how I love this particular gospel story. You can imagine the scene, I hope. It's 8 o'clock, perhaps, on a sunny morning. It's in the month of May, and we're by Lake Galilee, not far from Capernaum, probably some the same place as where Jesus had first called the disciples when they were first mending their nets. And they've been out fishing again. It's been all night, and they've caught absolutely nothing. Zero fish, absolutely nothing in the nets. And a strange figure is standing on the shore, and it calls out to them, "Try the other side." They do so, and they nearly sink, keeling over with a vast haul of fish now in their nets. This is Jesus doing his stuff once again. This is the risen Jesus, back from the dead. By the way, the happiest man in the world at that moment, the conqueror over life and death. And he's having teasing fun with his best mates. And as they come ashore, they discover that he's prepared a barbecue for them, bringing coals ready to cook some of those fish for a well-earned breakfast. And Jesus is there with those 7 disciples on that particular occasion, and he's having this special meal together there on the beach, a meal that will have reminded them of the Last Supper that they'd had together in Jerusalem. Now, one of the 7 disciples we know now was John, the disciple whom Jesus loved. He was there. He's the one who wrote John's gospel. And when he shared these stories in his gospel, those special times with Jesus, I'm sure he was wanting us to sense that we too can be caught up in these stories and come to share in that friendship and knowledge of Jesus that he, the writer of the gospel, was. And so it is here. We find ourselves there on the beach, as it were, the risen Jesus speaking with us. And in particular, as Jesus goes on to have a one-to-one conversation with Simon Peter, we find ourselves being drawn into such a conversation with Jesus ourselves. For Jesus, as we heard in our reading, asks Simon Peter 3 times, "Do you love me?" Jesus wants Simon Peter to know that the most vital thing in his following of Jesus as a disciple is that this is a relationship of love between the master and the disciple. And he wants us to know that too. "Do you love me?" he says to each one of us. "I don't care how many times you go to church," Jesus is saying, as it were. "I don't care how many good works you do." We begin to feel the pressure as he begins to press his point. And he asks again, "Do you love me?" And this time we find ourselves saying, "Well, yes," but just to make sure, he asks a third time, pressing the point home. Simon Peter was hurt, we read, when Jesus asked the third time. Now, there was an extra reason for that. He had denied Jesus 3 times. And Jesus was deliberately touching on that painful wound in Peter's memory and giving him a chance to reverse his 3 denials, to profess instead his love for Jesus. And we too may feel uncomfortable when Jesus presses this point home on our hearts. But Jesus will not be content with a half-mumbled answer. He wants to hear us say it. "You know, Lord, that indeed I do love you." The risen Christ wants us to be in this relationship with him and for us to be clear that we are in that too. So what do we learn from this story about knowing Christ? 2 things particularly come to mind for me. Firstly, we can't pretend with Jesus. Jesus knows all about Simon Peter's denial and his failures. We have to come clean with Jesus, full transparency, out of the murky shadows of pretense and playing games into his light. That's why it is so good at every communion service, before we ever dare to come to the Lord's table to meet with Christ, that we have a prayer of confession, and also a prayer of humble access, as it's called. 2 opportunities at least to come clean, to stop pretending. Are we being honest with the Lord today? Secondly, I notice that Jesus wants us to speak out words of faith and love. He doesn't want us to mumble. He wants to hear us say it. Simon Peter, over his lifetime, found himself saying, I do believe. You are the Christ. And now, I do love you. Those things came out of his lips. That's why when adults are baptized, they're asked questions and they must reply in their own voice. I believe and trust in him. And there'll be a similar opportunity for us to renew some of our baptism promises in a few moments later in our service. Yeah, there's also a third thing we can learn today about knowing Christ. And this we learn from St. Paul. Not just that we can't pretend with Christ, not just that we need to articulate our faith and our love for Christ in actual words, but also thirdly, that we will never really grow in our knowledge of Christ if we do not keep him number one in our hearts. We must keep him number one. He doesn't easily take second place. And other things that we value highly have to lose their grip on our affections. Paul, you know, had many things in his life to be proud of. He had a great pedigree and background, tribe of Benjamin. He had a great education in Jerusalem. He was top of the class. He was the most zealous student. But he now had to dismiss all of those, treat them as worthless. Even he calls them dung or excrement, compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. The most important thing. Paul now puts knowing Christ at the top of his list. It's the only thing that counts for anything. Everything else, says Paul, and I'm saying it too, is tawdry rubbish compared with this. It pales into insignificance. But this is a difficult thing to do. So many other things pull at our heartstrings. We value so many other things as precious. And many things in life become what we lean on for our sense of security, our sense of confidence, our sense of value. And we just can't imagine life without them. But Jesus wants to cut through our addictions and our dependencies and says to us, you can rely on me. I will not let you down. Come to me, he says, all you who are traveling, all you modern people with all your mod cons and technologies for solving problems and your coping mechanisms, all the things you trust in, and I will give you the rest and the security that you crave and seek. Don't lean on them, lean on me. Or what are we leaning on that is not the Lord? What is the source of our confidence? What do we love more than Christ? Sometimes we grip these things so tightly, but Jesus wants to come and gently but firmly prise open our fingers till we have open hands before him. And I have to ask the same question for myself. What are the idols in my heart? This is Peter speaking. What are the idols in my heart? And what are the things I'm relying on to get me through life or to support me as the rector, whatever. I once shocked the congregation in Abingdon during a service by throwing my recently completed PhD thesis on the ground in front of the pulpit. I brought a couple of my books here, but I'm not going to shock you by doing that, but I mean it right now. Having a PhD means nothing compared with knowing Jesus. Full stop. As Georgie often reminds me, PhD really stands for Pretty Hopeless Darling. And it's true. And being the author of several books or being a professor means absolutely nothing. I won't actually use Paul's rude word for what it means compared with knowing Jesus. So my dear friends in the Itchen Valley, as we set out into what is the start of my second year in the parish, can I urge you to make knowing Christ your absolutely number one priority for the coming year. Nothing else compares. And if as I speak like this, you're not 100% sure that you would actually say that, yes, I know Christ, well, please take some proactive steps to sort out what might be blocking you from enjoying this relationship. Maybe it is time to go on an alpha course, or maybe to ask a friend round, or even the rector, if you can call him a friend, and have that conversation. Please help me. I want to know Christ, but I'm not too sure what the steps are. But if your heart right now is assuring you that, yes, however faintly, you know that you do know him and you do love him, will you take some more active steps in the next few months to get to know him better? Maybe it is coming on the Jesus Way course. Maybe it's taking some Bible reading notes. Maybe it's giving some time each day to pray. Whatever it is. Or maybe it's taking out of your lifestyle something that's getting in the way of your relationship with him. So I come back to the strapline. I hope in the light of what we've learnt from the examples of Peter and Paul, you will be seeing in a fresh way the wonderful opportunity that we have, each one of us, to know Christ personally. And that you will indeed want to join with me in the coming year in trying to know Christ better and to make him better known.